Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the AAC meeting today on Monday, November 2nd, 2020. To begin with, please know that this meeting is being recorded and we do place the audio of the meeting on our website, which is WMATA.com, just like we do for BRS and Metro Access subcommittee meetings. At this time, I will take a roll call of the committee members. So please confirm your presence. And the roll call is as follows. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Hino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles?
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy? I do know that
Rico present. Is
here. Thank you. Melanie Jackson? Steve Caffin?
Present.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mary Kay did email that informing that she is not going to be able to attend the meeting today. Philippa Mazzell. Anthony Oberg.
Hello.
Hi, Anthony. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush?
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samaford?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, Patrick Philippa. Sheehan. Oh, sorry. Philippa Mazzell is here. My microphone wasn't enabled.
Okay, thank you for informing, Philippa. Patrick Sheehan?
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simono? I thought I saw Kelly signing in.
Okay. Sorry, I was unmuting. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. That concludes our roll call for today's meeting. Now I will go ahead and read the meeting agenda out loud. And the meeting agenda for today's meeting is as follows. We just went through the roll call of the committee members. That also gave an introduction, kind of. Now we will have approval of agenda, prior meeting minutes, and the board report. Chair Posner will do that, followed by a scheduling and dispatch software overview that's going to be presented by Terrian Williams-Hall. She is the director of Metro Access. Afterwards, the committee will discuss Hedinger Award schedule discussion. We have another committee discussion titled Metro is Safe for Riders with Persons with Disabilities and Seniors. Afterwards, we will have public comments section. We will have bus and rail subcommittee report presented by Mr. Calabia, and Mr. Samaford will present the Metro Access subcommittee report, and the meeting will adjourn at 7:30. That was the agenda for today's meeting. We do not have any guest speakers besides Ms. Williams-Hall. Just to share some helpful tips for this virtual meeting, for people joining via phone calls, you may know that you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make some comments, you can raise virtual hands or lower your virtual hands by pressing *9. Anyone joining through the video call, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself, or raise virtual hands by clicking on the hand. This will indicate if your intention to speak, and it also allows only one person at a time to speak. We do have ASL interpreters on the call with us. So please state your name first before you make comments. This not only helps them, but anyone joining on phone calls, it also helps them knowing who's speaking. Please keep yourself on mute. It helps us eliminate any external noise. I believe all the participants are on mute right now, but like I said, you can mute and unmute yourself as needed. Without any further delay, I would ask Chair Posner to move the meeting forward. Chair Posner, you have the floor.
Good evening. Welcome to everybody. I've done a quick count and we don't have a quorum tonight. So I'm going to shuffle the agenda a little bit, hoping two more people will show up. With the cold weather, it's hard to get into headquarters to join us. So for the approval of the agenda, I've had a couple of requests to move up the reports from our subcommittees, because it was pointed out to me the last two meetings we haven't had a report from the subcommittees, which we've run over.
Chair Posner?
Yes.
This is Anu. I believe we have 11 people on this call.
Okay, so I only counted 10. I must have missed one. That's okay.
No worries. Just wanted to make sure you know.
Well, that's good. Okay. Well, we do have an agenda, so we can approve the agenda. We can approve the minutes and the board report. But I would still like to move our reports from the subcommittees up a little bit in the agenda so that we don't run out of time this time, as we have the last 2 months. The other thing is, when we're discussing the letter to the board, there are two items in there about the waivers for participating in safety drills, and also about the new sedans that have come in. And I'd like to have some time to talk about those, because I think they're important. I think that ADAP has done a great job in getting us the sedans, and they've done everything they can do, but it's gone into the black hole of procurement. And once again, they have not done us any favors. So I would say that we have a little more time to discuss that during the approval of the letter to the board, and also move up the subcommittee reports. We've also had a request from Steve and also from Paul to have some time during public comment, and we'll go ahead and do that. So if I can have a second for those agenda item changes or any others that people would like, please.
Second.
Awesome.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we have our agenda for the evening. Hopefully everyone has had a chance to read the prior meeting minutes. And so I'll take a motion to approve the prior meeting minutes for discussion.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Any opposed? Since no one's opposed, we'll take that as being accepted. And so let's get to the letter from the board, from the chair to the board. And there are two items that I added based upon, one, the presentation that we had at our last meeting from our safety officer, chief safety officer, of the reason for not having waivers or insisting on waivers before we're permitted to participate in safety exercises. And she blamed that on the high cost of insurance. And I have in that letter requested that the board take a look at some way to counter that high cost. They currently have an insurance policy for liability that has a huge deductible, and they have a separate account to cover that huge deductible. And the amount of cost for anything that might happen to one of us or our equipment or our service animals, compared to the increased information they would gain for evacuation from decoupled trains or other disasters that have occurred over the past year, I think it's a no contest. And so I have requested that they think of a way to eliminate that problem that they claim exists, but I don't think exists, about the insurance coverage. And once again, continue our request to waive the waivers, so that we can participate and help them to train people to evacuate people with disabilities during emergencies. The other thing that I did was on the sedans, and I'll take feedback from pilot people that have tried them already, because Mr. Blake has had people ride in the new sedans. But one of the things that has happened is there was an RFP that was put out, which included all of the requests that we and ADAP had requested for the sedans to be effective for everybody with a disability. One of the major things that we learned from the big vans is people that occupy space have difficulty getting through a door that doesn't open by 90 degrees. People getting into an automobile and transferring from a mobility device have great difficulty, if not impossibility, getting into a vehicle, a car, a sedan, that does not have a door that opens 90 degrees. We stated that at our meeting. We stated that when we tested the different vehicles. Mr. Blake found two vehicles that did have 90 degree door opening, the Honda and the Malibu. We could not specifically request cars because it's a different purchasing concept, but that was included in the RFP as a requirement for any bid for the vehicle. It's right there on the website. And yet, procurement has chosen to select an automobile that does not have a 90 degree door opening.
Okay, but I gotta clarify, Mr. Chairman, yes. Just for you, and this is not to influence what goes in your letter. You know, I don't do that. I'm always say advocate. The procurement said near 90 degree door opening, and in fact, the front door of the vehicle, the passenger side front door, is near 90 degree open. What the person, in this case, Ms. Rush, tested, she entered into the back door. And that is not near 90 degree. So I just want to make so when you make your statement in the letter, I just want to be clear that procurement, you know, I'll listen to the rest of it, but on that point, I can't, you know, have it on the record that I sat back and heard that procurement failed, because on that point they really did not.
Well, I cut and pasted from the website what was in the RFP. And what I cut and pasted was 90 degree door opening, not near 90 degree door opening.
Okay.
So they have
the front door does meet the perspective. The front door does meet it.
But so we're going to have anybody with a wheelchair come in through the front door.
Not necessarily, because again, it's all people who, it's all, you know, one-to-one. It's a person-by-person case. But in the case of Ms. Rush, she actually sat in and fit in the back seat of the car.
Right, but she wasn't transferring from the wheelchair.
Yes, she was. Her wheelchair, I didn't send you guys the pictures, but I did take pictures, and her wheelchair was placed in the trunk and was transported along with her.
But I wasn't in the wheelchair. I walked down the steps.
No, you walked to the door, right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, a person who has a wheelchair and cannot do that. When we first tested the car, I had a stroke and I could barely walk on my own at all. But we're playing with words. You know that we hardly any of us got in the back in the front seat. We got in the back seat.
That is correct.
Okay, well then, how many...
But the front seat is offered, number one. So let me, and I want to let you guys get to your discussion of the letter, but let me give you Access's point of view on this and my point of view in the direction we're going with it. I mean, I'll let you guys say what you have to say, but I want to be very clear. I have to disagree. And if somebody asks me, you know, I'm going to have to disagree on the record that procurement, Metro's procurement, failed in this procurement. They delivered a sedan that had standards based on the feedback I received from the ADA and other members of the disability community. Also, Metro's position, my position that I'm saying to my boss, my boss's boss, and the public, is that there are going to be thousands of Metro customers who absolutely only want to use the sedan. For customers who are too tall, too short, too wide, or have a disability that makes entering and exiting the sedans less than desirable, or riding in a long ride in a sedan less than comfortable and would desire not to ride in a sedan, we're asking those customers to let us know. We will designate them as van only and promise that they will not be placed in a sedan, much like we're doing with customers who are saying they do not want to ride in the Ford Transits because those are too small for them. However, if the AAC, the disability community, is not happy with the Toyota Camry, I respect that, and you should express yourself. But Access, we're very thrilled with this procurement. We're very appreciative of our colleagues. We wish that this could have been faster. If there was a way I could have just picked a particular vehicle and make everybody happy, but I don't think everybody would be happy with any one particular vehicle. But if there was a way, I would have done that. But for the overwhelming masses of our ridership, again, there will be thousands of customers who will enjoy this ride, request this ride, and in fact, only want to ride in a sedan, and we will be very hard pressed to accommodate all of those wishes. I respect the AAC's position on this, and I say again, advocate, and if you're not happy, you've got to express yourself, but we're going to have to respectfully disagree strongly on this in based on my experience elsewhere and my experience that I've read about here at Metro when you had sedans previously that were nowhere near the size of these Toyota Camrys. Respectfully.
Thank you. And respectfully, I agree, and I compliment you on the job that you did. And respectfully, I am hoping the Inspector General will look into why they chose a car that did not meet the standards they posted on their board for all four doors. I mean, it's that simple. I just want to know why they picked it. I mean, does that better gas mileage? Was it cheaper? Do they have a cousin that works for the company? They posted in their RFP 90-degree opening doors. And so that's my only request, is I think it should be looked into by somebody. And I'll throw it open to the group. Paul, you have something you wanted to say about the sedans?
Yes. So I did ride this Saturday morning. And here's my experience was, you know, it was a smooth ride. I was able to get in, but here's some interesting facts along the way. So when I got to the the driver opened the door, he already had the front seat pushed up, for the leg room. And I'm looking at his seat arch back and I'm thinking, okay, I'm a big person. Yes, I put it out there. How are we going to fit two big people in there? Like I said, there's a sedan. I mean, there's a, if a customer doesn't like it, they can opt out of it. But I'm just putting what other people have said about it. And then I asked the driver, you do understand that you might have to transport people in the front if necessary. And he said, oh, I'll quit before that. So y'all may want to message to these drivers, because obviously when he pushed that seat up front, he very clearly gave the message, no one's sitting in the front. So y'all need to message that to the drivers who eventually will be using these vehicles, that customers may need to use the front. I'm just putting that out there. Second piece is, as I look at the providers, whoever had 6200, there was no cone, no orange cone. That's a problem. It's my understanding it should be a cone in every vehicle. Is that correct? Because you know the safety cone y'all put out in the back? It was not in that vehicle.
Sorry, I'm sorry, I was on mute.
So, yeah, I was too, Mr. Blake, I apologize.
Okay, yes. If you notice in the vehicles, what we have right now, we're getting people out because I wanted people to ride mm-hmm. in the vehicle. Even the MDT, if you notice, the MDT was not giving the turn-by-turn direction, or at least I don't believe it was just yet. It may have been by now. right now you're riding in a vehicle. We want your feedback on terms of the ride. These trips are very orchestrated, if you will. Everything that's in the van will eventually be in the sedan, but right now these are very orchestrated, monitored trips, and that's why you didn't see that. But I did hear that you asked to look in the trunk, and that was great. And
yeah, so plenty of trunk room, but yeah, I would think from a safety standpoint, that's just the thing y'all do. And then the Rangers,
we had you covered. We had a vehicle following you and monitoring you. We're like Google. We know everywhere you go and what you're doing.
Okay.
And so right now we're focused on your ride experience.
No, the ride experience is good. I'm just saying some of the things that surround it, like the Ranger didn't have the trip. I called and I was like, yeah, you got to put the trip on. They have to know where I'm going.
We had a paper manifest.
I was just asking those questions.
All I can say now, the AAC, you have to kind of work with me now. You guys get upset if you don't be the first to know and first to see. If I could easily just put the vehicles out there in service, and when you happen to get a ride, you happen to get a ride, but it might be 5-6 weeks from now after hundreds of other customers have already ridden. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to do is give members of the committee, as well as members who've been active, who may not necessarily be AAC members, but happen to be very active AAC participants, opportunities to ride first before the general public. So we're moving the vehicles out there. We're running the service like it was run back, 25 years ago, paper manifest, a little bit of communication where needed. But right now, what we're asking for is your feedback and your experience riding in the vehicle, getting in and out and riding in the vehicle.
Okay, so next time if I ride one, I can request to sit in the front to see what that is like, right?
Absolutely.
Instead of what I saw where the seat was already pushed in. So the implication was no one's riding in the front. And when I asked him the question, he's like, that was the intention. So you need to communicate.
If that's what happens, you need to report that back to me. But it's my understanding.
Yeah, that was the intention. I asked him very specifically. He said, if customers ride in the front, I won't be riding this vehicle. I said, okay.
I will follow up with Transdev. And number one, whether the driver felt that way or not, that was not appropriate communication with a customer. So I will deal with Transdev and how their employees spoke to you. But also it's my understanding that, and Transdev is doing all these trips right now. We may move some vehicles around, but right now they're all coming from Transdev. And when Mr. Ansel Torres was provided a trip, he actually did ride in the front seat.
Okay. But I think it's also based on, the whole COVID thing. So do make sure they have the conversations with the drivers to let them know that, because that option was not given to me because it already was pushed all the way far front before I even had the opportunity. So that's it.
Thank you, Paul. I have waiting to be heard. Patrick, Vanessa Coles, Denise, and I think I had one more. Mr. Torres.
Right.
So let's start with Patrick, and then we'll go to Vanessa, and then Denise, and then Mr. Torres.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. Mr. Blake, explanation of requirements to me seems very weak. When you have a requirement that the doors need to be X, it is assumed that we're talking about all the doors, not just one out of three doors. I would not want to have to defend that kind of poor procurement logic to my bosses. I don't think we can say that the folks in acquisition and procurement didn't follow the requirements, but a requirement is a requirement. And saying that the front door nearly meets it, we've got one out of three doors that you can get into, is not good enough. Also, it's not consistent with the policy that is out there with respect to COVID-19. So I have a problem with how we're sort of contradicting that policy. And then lastly,
Let's slide on for a second, Patrick. What policy with COVID-19
that you want to have people sitting in the back?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so then, but the doors in the back don't meet the 90 degree opening that we need. So you're defeating that argument. And then lastly,
but you got to remember this solicitation was developed before COVID-19 came along.
But the decision.
So that wasn't what it was based on.
Okay, and what about the requirements?
Then again,
we had more than enough time to. The requirements, we had more than enough time to change those requirements. Then lastly, your argument saying that it's going to help most people, and I agree with that, but that's not the way a procurement should be made on the basis of metro access.
I disagree with you. I fundamentally, totally disagree with you. The fact is, and I just have to jump in here on a second. The fact is that Metro has had a van-only strategy for a number of years. Although I always have to keep reminding you all that Metro Access trips, thousands of them, every month and every year have been provided in subcontracted taxi cabs. So Metro Access theoretically does not have a van-only fleet. We have a van-only dedicated fleet, or we did, but the idea that every vehicle must fit every customer in a paratransit fleet we just disagree fundamentally on that.
Right.
And Metro Access is one of the few that does not have a multi-vehicle fleet, to be quite frank with you.
When you have a requirement, you need to be able to follow those requirements. And buying a fleet of cars where most people can utilize them, that's not correct. That's wrong. And I think that the argument that you're using to just
saying, so are you saying, Patrick, and it's fair. Let me ask you a question. Are you suggesting, and is it the position of some members of the AAC that Metro Access dedicated fleet should be totally wheelchair accessible?
What I'm saying is that you need to follow the requirements in the RFP is what I'm
saying.
Well,
that's a different, we'll get to that. And I'm sure my procurement colleagues will be more than happy to address that. But what I'm asking you is a more fundamental question. Are you suggesting that your belief is that the Metro Access fleet should be wheelchair accessible only?
No.
Well, if that's the case, if you say no.
Hang on.
Okay.
No, wait a minute. Mr. Blake.
Yes.
It's not in the procurement. The procurement has requirements which need to be followed.
We've agreed. We'll deal with that. Said.
Wait a minute.
You said, hang Patrick. On.
I'm, sir.
Yes.
Just let me finish my statement.
Okay.
I'm saying that your procurement requirements need to be followed.
And we agree.
If the requirements are not followed, and I'm not saying this is ADAP's fault. I'm just saying that when we have requirements that need to be, that are on there that need to be followed, it would be nice to know why they are not followed. And so that would be something that would be interesting for the procurement people, not you, to have to come and answer for, because if you're saying doors need to be X amount, do we now have to say all doors? Is that how we do our rail, cars, that most doors are going to be this way or that way? I mean, when you put that procurement out, you're talking about all the doors on a rail car. So I just have problems with the logic that is being used to justify why the procurement was being made. Maybe this was the best you could do. I don't know. I'm not asking you to argue on behalf of the procurement, because perhaps they have some reasons we don't know about. But a requirement is a requirement. And if they can't meet it, I'd like to know why. Maybe they didn't have any.
And we agree on that, Patrick. But Patrick, so the procurement piece aside, and we'll come back to that. I'm all for that, and it should be in your letter, and Metro will respond if necessary. My question to you, though, goes back to you said Metro Access should not purchase a vehicle that all customers cannot ride. Is that your philosophical belief?
Well, let me jump in and say that when you have vehicles like Uber and Lyft there is a requirement that a certain percentage of their vehicles are wave capable. Okay, and so that should meet it. And that's fine that it needs to be. The question with this, and that's the main point I bring up, is why did they not follow their own guidelines? But we've discussed it quite a bit, and so I think we need to let Denise talk and then Vanessa talk. Or Vanessa.
Thank you. Denise. Yeah, that's fine, Phil. Thank you.
Vanessa?
Yes. Hello.
Yes, please.
I did experience riding in a sedan about a week or so ago, and my experience was very good. It's very spacious, leg room and everything. The driver was at the door. My only concern is during this COVID time, being that close together, is there plans to put a shield up or anything? And then my other, well, not really concerned, but the driver wanted to talk and we had the radio going. Is that something they are going to be allowed to have? I mean, I enjoyed it and I'm not trying to be a tattletale, but we had the radio going.
No, the radio will not be a regular part of the of a Metro Access ride. The radio should have been off. So I will follow up on that. I wish you would have told me that last week when you called me, because
I don't want to be a telltale, but I enjoyed it. And I don't see why they cannot have it.
No, because whatever music he had that you enjoyed, the next customer may not enjoy. So we don't get into that. That's the main reason.
Well, it's not telltale. That's the truth.
I might like country music, you know, I want to listen to, you know, God Bless the USA, and you may want to listen.
Well, maybe they can just keep it on the CNN or news station.
Oh, no, we don't want to get into that.
To point out, it's a major safety issue, because studies have been done that distraction caused by listening to the radio is one of the major causes of accidents, so we can take it for a safety purpose. Ms. Rush.
Okay. The 90 degree angle. We sat in cars that had the 90 degree in the back, and I guess it had it in the front. Why couldn't we have gotten one of those cars that had the 90 degree? That's number one. And a requirement is a requirement. And you know, playing with the words, one door had it, two doors had it, or left side had it, right side is playing with words. We just want to know why the requirement was not met.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'll summarize that. I will modify my letter to the board, send it out to everybody, and try to hit the points that we made today. And once again, point that the questions we're asking of procurement, not of ADAP, not of anybody else, but why they made the decision. They should be able to justify the decision that they made. And that's what we're asking. So next item, I believe we're up to Ms.
Hello?
Oh, I think Mr. Torres had a comment.
Oh, okay, because you took your hand down.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me put it back up then.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the opportunity to speak here. I am just very concerned that we in the disabled community are being made fools of in this process. It goes back to something that I've said in the past, that based on an article, two articles I read, I believe it was on September 10th and September 11th, in the Metro section of the Washington Post by Justin George, WMATA management operates in a world of their own, unaccountable to anyone, really. The Safety Commission wrote a very scathing report about the attitudes of management, where this commission was established by the funders of Metro, okay? They were set up to provide recommendations. They provided safety recommendations after a few accidents where people died. 21 recommendations were made. And WMATA management simply told their subordinates to ignore, you hear me? Ignore what the safety commission was saying. Even recently, with another accident that was being investigated, there are reports that evidence is being tampered with. And I fear that that attitude is pervasive in Metro Access as well. Maybe not to the same degree, but there is a pattern that is repeating itself. The AAC is here to make recommendations representing the voice of the disabled community. And we are not funding AAC, Metro Access. We are here to provide advice. So I feel, you know, we don't have the money to use as leverage. What chance do we have of Metro Access actually listening to us when the people who are actually paying the bill at Metro is not even being listened to? And I think it's a very sad commentary that yet again, we in the disabled community are being shafted. We are being wrong, because this silliness about, oh, well, one door complies. So when we were determining whether or not it was accessible, most of us were using the back seat. So obviously we would want the back seat to have the 90 degree angle. So I think that is a very slippery cop out there. And I that is sad. And it reminds me very much of another conversation that we were having about the performance standard. In the contract, it says 92% performance. And then at a meeting, at another meeting, Mr. Blake is saying, oh, well, 90 is going to be acceptable. And I remember, Pat, you having that discussion about the slippery slope of these requirements just going downhill and nobody is being told. And by any definition, that's a rogue operation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Torres.
And Mr. Dr. Posner, if I could just say real quick, Mr. Chairman, I've been unable to find what was posted online. I'm looking right now, but I know I have access to my own document.
It's on page 81 to 85 of RFP.
And in my written document, I'll see what they posted online. Technical specification A was must have fuel rating of at least 46 miles per gallon. Specification B, near 90 degree opening angle for easy entry and exit. So it didn't say 90 degree, at least that's what I wrote. Now, I'm gonna go back and check and see what was posted.
I went through all 150 pages of the RFP, and buried at the very end, they actually had their requirements.
Correct.
SPW.
Right.
And I cut and pasted that directly on my email. And
okay.
So, and
I'm gonna check it out.
To save you having to go through the entire document, go to pages 81 to 85.
Okay, and thank you.
And also, this is Denise Rush. Also note that you couldn't find it, so you know people who can't see had a hard time finding it. Okay.
No, because I'm using a telephone and not a desktop, so I have challenges reaching. They're desktop oriented, not necessarily tablet and mobile oriented. Something we can work on, but it's not from a disability standpoint, at least in my case.
No. But anybody with ADD would have a hard time finding it, because you have to go through a lot of pages. But anyway,
Mr. Chairman, can I just make one sentence statement?
And Ms. Williams Hall, if you will unmute yourself and take the stage.
Yes, sir.
I think Mr. Torres had one last comment, Mr. Chairman. I think I overspoke.
I just want to one sentence comment. I know we have to move on.
Go ahead,
all I want to say about this is why these procurement standards should have been brought before the committee instead of saying, go look it up on the internet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon again, everyone. Good evening at this time. So there is no new update with regard to the scheduling and dispatch software solicitation effort. We did lose our project manager. She transferred to another position in the authority. Mr. Blake and I are aggressively preparing for interviews to fill that position. We still believe that we will primarily be on track. Expect a more substantial overview to be provided on the December 7th meeting. I have no additional updates at this point, aside from what was just shared, but I'd be happy to take your questions.
Thank you. Floor is open. Anybody put their hand up? I see silence. So thank you very much. And we can move on to the next item, which is the Hettinger Ward schedule discussion, committee discussion. But I'd like to defer to Mr. Blake, if he'll unmute himself.
Yes, sir.
To tell us what's possible. Because if we're going to do this the old way, we have to have nominations, then we have to have a vote, and then we have to have the ceremony. And so let me ask you, what do we have available in the way of nomination forms and timetables, et cetera, et cetera?
In terms of nominating, that's pretty simple. I always did the vote, and given that tomorrow's election day, I mean, this is apropos, and I think you guys always trusted my vote. You send me the votes, and I report out, and I didn't share with anybody. But we would have to start, number one, with the nominations, and I would probably turn this over to Anu or Carol. I mean, I've got other things to prepare for, you know, including a chairman's letter response.
Okay.
No, but my point is, the question really is, anything's possible. The only thing that's absolutely off the table this year is a ceremony with the food and all the, you know, the pomp and circumstance that we generally offer. But the question the AAC, and again, I know you've had this kind of not official discussion, but do you want to give an award this year? If the answer is yes, then all it takes is some nominations, and then we'll conduct a secret election. Do you want to give an award in a year where you can't have the worthy ceremony? And I don't have a bone to pick in that fight, if you will. Or do you want to have, assuming COVID-19 is under control, there's a vaccine or what have you, perhaps two awards next year? That's kind of great. What this discussion is about.
Okay, well, let's answer the first question. For discussion purposes, I'll make a motion that we have a Hettinger Award this year. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay, it's on the floor for discussion, and then we'll call a vote, and then we'll know where we're going to go from there. So any discussion as to why we want one or why we don't want one, please raise your hand. I see Ansel has his stand still up. I think he just forgot to pull it down.
No, I do want to say something.
Okay, well, let me see if there's any committee members first.
I just have a brief comment, Phil.
Steve?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it last time. I think we have two separate pieces here. I think, the award and the way we honor it are two separate things. I think from the standpoint of the recipients of the award, I think the recipients would be honored to receive the awards in the year that their achievements are known, even if perhaps the celebration is deferred. You know, we have, at this point in time, we're still dealing with contingencies as to when, hopefully next year. So let's do the awards as is and deal with the ceremonies in the future when they occur.
So you're suggesting Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL, that you win the Super Bowl, the championship, and the World Series, and you get your rings the following year on opening day. I believe that's what you just suggested.
Yeah, I think. Okay.
Any other hands?
Dr. Posner, this is Anu. I just wanted to share this. In the last AAC meeting, Ms. Rush had recommended for the AAC to receive a survey, which was shared with them. And I received feedback from five members. And the consensus was, and I'm, if you'd like, I can, share names and their specific comments. But just to give you a gist, the consensus was to award the individuals this year and hold the celebrations next year. I'll be happy to share the details with the committee.
That's fine. So we'll let Mr. Torres speak now because I don't see anybody else. I do see Doris. So Ansel, go ahead, and then Doris, you're next.
I concur with the last speaker on the topic. He said everything I wanted to say.
Thanks. Okay, great. Doris?
Yes, I agree with issuing the award and perhaps whatever press releases, and actually noting that a ceremony will be deferred. Yes, I agree with everything.
Okay, I think we've had our full discussion, so let's take a vote since we do have our quorum. All in favor of picking a winner this year? Well, easier to say, any opposed to picking the winner this year?
Opposed.
Okay, there's one opposition, two
opposition. Denise Rush, oppose.
Three opposition. Okay, that's 3 out of 10. So I believe the motion passes. So the next thing that we need to do is ask Anu if you would send out the nomination forms to everybody by email. And what's a reasonable time span for you, Anu, as far as getting the nominations in so we can then circulate them?
I can send them out tomorrow.
Okay.
And how much time would the committee require to, what would be a good turnaround for everyone?
Well, I think if you send them out tomorrow, we can ask that they be in immediately following the bus rail meeting, and then we can have the vote at Metro Access.
Sounds good.
And the vote can be by mail, email, but we can make the announcement at Metro Access, so we can get it all done this month.
Okay, sure. So I will try my best to send them out tomorrow.
Okay, that sounds great. We're moving along. So, yes.
I had a question on the award. This is Pat. So we're voting for one recipient for the Hettinger Award?
Well, we're going to see what the nominations are, and if somebody has a majority, it'll be one. If it's a tie, then it'll be two or three or four. So the way we've typically done it in the past, it has been the person with the most votes.
I couldn't remember if we had agreed on something in the past or whatever, but okay, good, thanks.
Okay, so let's move on and
Dr. Posner, I believe Doris is trying to make some comments. She has her hand up.
Oh, okay, go ahead, Doris.
I just wanted to ask, because there are some technology problems that I'm having with new technology. If one needs to, can they call in to Anu with their votes or whatever?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's fine. But if one of the Republican members of the committee has their lawyer contact WMATA, they may challenge your vote and may have to go to the Supreme Court. But otherwise, I think we can be accessible to that.
Thank you.
Is Denise Rush and Mitch McConnell for this committee?
Yeah, exactly. It's good that we all still have a sense of humor. Okay, Paul Semelfort, your moment in the sun. Unmute yourself and give us your report.
Oh, wow, this early. Oh, okay. All right, I got, okay.
Yeah, I love your video.
I made a point. Oh, okay. All right, so let me bring up my report. So last month, we had multiple discussions here. I didn't expect it this early, but I'll do it. One second as I bring it up.
Be careful what you ask for. Remember that.
I wasn't expecting it this early, but hey, I'll work with it. Where's my screen? Oh, okay, beautiful. So I have my report in front of me. All righty. So, where is that? There we go. Okay, so from last month's minutes, we talked about the Metro Access sedans. We have 177 that have been ordered, and two have been delivered, and committee members have been testing them. They've been giving feedback. The public at large riding community is beginning to give feedback, and we will see how this unfolds. It will be 30% of the fleet, and I'm presuming the vehicles will be spread amongst all of the providers, or is it just going to be specific providers that will be utilizing them?
Each provider will receive a proportionate share of their service. So one provider has 35% of the service, they will get 35% of the vehicles. Two of them have 25 each, and then one has 15. So we will divide the vehicles in that percentage.
And, you know, the AAC discussed their concerns about the vehicle, and that will be incorporated into our current board letter going out. We talked about the Metro Access scheduling software update with Ms. Williams-Halls, that there's a new proposal for a different system that can expand opportunities and allow many more different functionalities, such as, you know, customers calling in and if they're calling from a common number, you know, they already know who the customer is. And, you know, can better respond to the customer's needs. And hopefully we will, from my understanding, there is an option to have sort of, you know, like with bus and rail when our vehicle is, that functionality will hopefully exist. But we were told that it may take about roughly up to 2 years' time to work out all those kinks to have sort of have an app as to see where's my ride, you know, where my ride is in actual real time and plan accordingly. And that will help us on a lot of ends. So we look forward to that and the information that we will receive both at the AAC and the Metro Access Subcommittee in December. The other thing we talked about was our communication issues that Mr. Torres brought up. And some of the possible recommendations for hopefully improved communications between the AAC and, you know, ADAP and what is, you know, dispensed to customers. And that is still an ongoing process. And we probably will discuss some of that at the next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. Ms. Rush, did I miss anything else? Ms. Rush?
Yes. We talked about the communication, or we went back and forth about the language of accessibility in 501 and 504.
Yeah, the big piece about the website in terms of its accessibility and hopefully we can get more clarification on that or more deep discussion on that.
Yeah, 504 compatible, you know, the requirements, but is it usable? I guess, you know, when Mr. Blake was at my house, I told him I wanted to show him that this is not easy to find. but, you know, it is accessible, the word accessible, but is it usable? Can you find it and understand, you know, how it works when it's going through the JAWS software? Is different than a person looking at it and seeing things that are telling them. It doesn't work the same for a blind person. So once we, you know, welcome, understand that, then the communication will be better. And just note, this is not just last time's meeting, but back when Mrs. Bellamy was living, we had a vote about getting sedans, and you, myself, Miss Bellamy, it was about four members said not to get the sedans, and that was the reason. It's not that we want the whole fleet to be wheelchair accessible, but if you can't even get up to the door with your wheelchair to scoop yourself in, that's not good. But that's why I voted no. I don't know why you voted, Paul, but, you know, we wanted something that is available for everyone, not just some. And that's all.
My last piece is I see on our agenda, hopefully we'll have a discussion about the web booking application, the new and improved one that people receive positive comments. Hopefully after 2 months, I see some things improved as I used it. And then there's some changes to it that I have questions. But hopefully we can address that next month with Mr. Schaefer and hopefully the IT team that can answer. Beyond that, any questions from any committee members?
I have a question. Just say that, you know, I offered to go over, do a Zoom with Ms. Rush and go over the website or the app with her. To see what her concerns are, or to help her figure out why there might be any JAWS issues. So, I mean, that's an open invitation. You know, I'd be glad to get on and help you with that.
All right, and Mr. Schaefer, we're on with the discussion now. It won't. Will the discussion will be on top of the that there was another piece that you had last month about changing requirements in terms of, I guess, username and password. Is that still being deferred?
No, we'll have that ready at the Metro Access meeting.
Okay, so it will be two pieces, both the web booking updates to the site that I see and I have a few questions about, and the other piece that you are going to present at the AAC. So right. I will adjust the agenda accordingly right now and resend it back out to everybody. So it okay. incorporates that, but those two pieces.
Thank you.
All right. Not anything else? No question. Patrick, you had a question? Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Thanks. Denise, maybe you can help me with this. It's something that I thought would be used, that was brought up a couple years ago. I don't remember. I think maybe you brought it up, me or Carolyn. I just don't remember. But you had an issue with the sedans being brought in with their effect on the overall availability of access of the entire fleet. Do you remember that argument? Because your arguments were persuasive. And although I disagreed with them at the time, the points you brought up were good, and it's something that I think the AAC needs to keep in mind, be able to track the sedan's effect on the overall fleet. Can you articulate any of that? Do you remember what you misgave?
Well,
sedans.
Well, when I started riding 20 years ago, that's all we had were sedans, and they stopped and started getting buses because that way they could transport wheelchair customers, and you had a little more room to, you know, get around on the bus, get on the bus, sit down and everything. And then we got the buses that were more for packages instead of people. And so Mr. Blake thought it would be better to have the sedan. And I, you know, we had the vote. It was, everybody wanted it except for four of us. Paul, myself, Carolyn, and I forgot the other person. But the reason, because you want something for everybody. For, yes. But if you can't even roll up to your wheelchair and to the door, because 45 degree doesn't allow your wheelchair to get close enough to the seat, is one of the main reasons that it wasn't wheelchair accessible. Paul, why did you vote no?
Pretty much along the same line. Oh, sorry. Yeah, pretty much along the same lines.
Yeah, but you know, the majority wins, so it was just thrown away, you know.
Can I ask a quick question since we do have a lot of time tonight? I think this is a good question. Now I gotta make let me be clear on something though. That remember that was a non-binding vote, so it wasn't that the majority won in sense that if there was an overwhelming vote that, hey, AAC doesn't like sedans and doesn't believe sedans should be a part of the Metro Access fleet, that Metro Access would not have purchased the vehicles. You've got to understand, we're taking advice. And sedans were absolutely a part of the long-term Metro Access strategy. My goal, of course, is to get a sedan that people would be happy with because I want the customers to be happy. But keep in mind, the original vehicle I was going to have added to the Metro Access fleet were Chevy Malibus because Metro already had a contract with them. But again, we're hearing things, we can do something different. But fundamentally, and this goes back to what I was asking Patrick earlier, and I'm don't take it like, oh, this is a threat. Don't even go there. That's not what I'm doing. But I'm saying as we start talking about every vehicle must fit everybody, I mean, it sounds like some of you are basically saying you don't even want the Abilities Ride program then.
No, we're not saying that. But
where's the consistency in your idealism?
Well, if I may break in with a little bit of idealism.
Yes, sir.
We have been requesting of WMATA to adjust the benches at the platforms and to adjust the accessible seating. And their response has been, oh no, the federal requirement is that they be this specific height so that wheelchair people can transfer onto them correctly. But they don't seem to be as worried about that for opening the doors 90 degrees.
Because, well, let me explain to you why. Let me explain to you why.
This is Pat again. You can't conflate the Abilities Ride with Metro Access. You know that because they're two different programs. So you can't A versus B.
Okay, I'm going to call.
This is Philippa. I've had my hand up for a while, so please. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I just want to officially say that was the end of my report, and I'm just taking questions. One person at a time, please.
Can I make a comment?
For the translators. Okay.
Okay.
Let's have a little quiet.
Dr. Posner, this is Anu. Doris has her hand up.
Yes.
Philippa, I have you on the list, and Vanessa.
Thank you.
So, Doris, go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I was going to say, I do remember the conversation that you're talking about, and I can't for sure vouchsafe. I may have been the other vote that went for the accessible vehicles, and I think it is absolutely consistent with certainly the intent of the ADA. And the thing about Abilities Ride is that you do have the option with Abilities Ride to seek an accessible alternative vehicle. So besides, as you always say, Mr. Blake, Abilities Ride is a supplemental service. But at any rate, also, hello, are you there?
Yes,
ma'am. I'm listening to you. I'm
I also wanted to say. I also wanted to say that I am. I wanted to vote with Ms. Rush on the issue of communication technology and web-based applications, because Section 508 is basic accessibility requirements, and usability is an issue throughout the disability community. In other words, something is really isn't accessible if it's not usable. And so that's why from the original ADA accessibility design standards, we had an amendment to the ADA which generated the 2010 accessibility standards, which provide more accessibility and usability. So I think there are a lot of analogies to ensuring that we're at a higher standard like WCAG 2.1 AA for all web-based platforms. So that's what I wanted to say.
Doris, thank you.
We agree.
Philippa, you were next.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to say I understand the concern about the back door not opening to a 90-degree angle, because for anyone, that makes it more difficult to get in and out of the car. I've noticed a lot of these car makers are making the back wheels closer to the back seat, and then the door gets all jammed, you know, sliced, and it doesn't open all the way. But with all due respect, I don't think there's going to be any vehicle that's going to suit everybody's needs. For instance, I cannot ride the Metro Access van, because the suspension system or shock system or whatever gives a jiggly ride, and I'm prone to motion sickness. I get motion sickness. Also, the windows are so huge, and I have a light sensitivity, and I have to, you know, pretty much put something over my head to shield me from all that light from those huge windows, whereas that wouldn't be quite the issue in a sedan. So I'm just saying, I don't think there's going to be any vehicle that's going to suit everyone's needs, just like when you're talking about the seat height. I think Elver had said a tall seat was better for him, but Mary Kay said a short seat was better for her, or vice versa. But so there's just never going to be a one size fits all for anything. That's all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Vanessa,
thank you for
your hand is still up. Are you still on an issue on this one? Vanessa?
Yes, I'm sorry. My question sort of falls in line with Mr. Nisi. Are the windows tinted on these sedans, or is that something that's going to be done in the future?
At this time, the windows are not tinted, no, ma'am.
Is that something you all will consider?
We will look into it. That wasn't initial planning. Only, again, I'm using my own personal experience and the ability for people to see inside for safety reasons and outside. That was not part of the planning that I even came into this with. But if we have discussions, we can look at it and consider it. It wasn't part of the planning, though.
That had been discussed in several different issues about the design of the van as well as the car. And there was a general feeling of the safety issue and not to go with the film, as I remember. We've had some really good discussion, and now it's Tino's time to update us on bus rail.
This is Tino. Can we back up just 1 second? Because with the mentioning of Carolyn Bellamy, it occurs to me that maybe we're in a process of suggesting nominees. And does that mean we could include Carolyn Bellamy amongst the nominees?
Well, when Anu sends the form out, everybody on this committee has the right to nominate as many people as they want, as long as they explain why they're nominating them. What we've done in the past when we've made our decision, because everyone on the committee doesn't always know everyone who's nominated, there's a brief bio and rationale for why you would nominate someone for the position. In the past, I've actually nominated more than one person in any given year. So I see no reason, you know, anyone on this committee could not nominate anyone or as many as they like, but they will be voted upon individually.
Yes. Well, obviously I'm interested in making sure that consideration is given to Carolyn Bellamy and also to Charlie Crawford. There is the former chair of years back of the bus rail committee who died. It was prominent enough. He got a big spread in the post obituary pages. I forget his name.
Brian.
I'm sorry.
Brian Miller.
Yes, Brian Miller. But is there any place I can, I don't know if I could easily find his obituary again. Is there somewhere that I could get some information on his background?
Yeah, if you look on Google and just search Brian Miller, they'll send you everything there is in the world about Brian Miller.
Okay.
Including the obituary.
Okay.
And since you subscribe to the Post, you can just go to the Post and go through the archives and you can get it that way.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Anu is not sending out names for possible endorsements.
No. She's sending out a blank form for each of us to nominate someone or just ignore it. So it's up to us to actively make the nominations.
Okay. So in my case, I did know Carolyn Bellamy and of course Charlie Crawford. So I would just have to look for background of Brian Miller. Is that it?
Yeah, if you'd like to do that, and you know, just fill out one form for Brian, one form for Carolyn, and one form for Charlie.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I say one thing about what was just brought up?
That is
my recollection that Carolyn received recognition as the winner of the Dick Hettinger Award previously, and I don't know whether that was together with a Lifetime Achievement Award or whether that was a separate. So I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but I think that we should probably think about that, or maybe it should be like a separate kind of category, you know?
No, actually, Doris.
Right, she didn't receive it.
No, she received a special award for appreciation for all she did. That was at the time the contracts were being changed and the format of the way the contracts were going to be handled. And we had special awards for both Carolyn and for Allison, for all of the things that they had done for us during the time that they were in their positions as ombudspeople. So no, she hasn't been nominated for a Hettinger and she hasn't won a Hettinger.
Okay, so I am remembering correctly that there were, in fact, yeah, I remember two occasions, actually.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, Tino, do you want to continue with your bus rail report?
Well, at our last bus rail subcommittee meeting, Rand Loney from the Department of Rail Car Maintenance made a presentation about the enormous work that they do each night to disinfect rail cars before they go out again in the morning. He mentioned that. He also said that he had no responsibility for any kind of ventilation measures that would be useful during the day when people were actually riding on the rail cars. So we talked about ventilation measures. And of course, he was only presenting regarding the disinfection of rail cars. He has no role with respect to buses, but buses also came up. And since that time, I have shared materials related to both buses and rail in terms of one of the measures that could be done to kill the germs that are in the air, the aerosol viruses. And one of those measures, of course, is the germicidal ventilation system. We mentioned that briefly while he was here. Carol mentioned the hand sanitation dispensers and where they're located in the stations, and they're located near the station manager's kiosk. There was some question, I think, by Doris as to whether there could be other locations for them. Doris, I think, wondered why they couldn't be maybe at the top of the escalators, but if not there, since there are usually two banks of turnstiles, one on each side of the station manager, whether one of those hand sanitizer stations could be set up on one side with one set of the turnstiles and then another on the other side. We also talked about the parking garage construction. Was again Carol who talked about it at Vienna Parking and the parking lot business there. Then we turned to the fiscal year budget hearings. And I think in addition to Phil and Patrick, was not all, also Paul, did you make a presentation, Paul Summerford?
What?
Did you make a presentation to the WMATA board on the budget?
Oh, yes, I had a little speech.
Okay. And then we talked a little bit for people who were going to make written submissions, things that they could put into it. Then the question of front door boarding came up. And of course, this is to begin to recollect fares since the buses have been running with people boarding from the back and could not pay fares. Then David took up the question of a service change regarding Route 42. And again, Carol generally talked about the 100% of the stations have now received new platform lights. That's roughly what we covered. And I urge people to see it online. Anu has put it up on an AAC webpage, and please look at it because then next week we can review it and vote on accepting it. Are there any questions? Hearing none, I guess there are no questions on that preface to what we'll be reviewing next week.
Thank you. I'll just remind everybody, if there is any interest in what the statements were made at the hearings and the report that I give to the board every month, they're all on YouTube, so you can watch us live. And I might suggest you take a look at last month's report from the RAC. It was a very long and interesting report that started out on a ride to the Vienna metro station on the rail and finished up in the office. And so if you have some time for entertainment, just head to YouTube and go to WMATA, and you can see all of the things that are going on.
So Phil, that only covers the oral presentations made in person or by Zoom.
Yes, those are the oral presentations and also the reports to the board.
Yes.
By us and by the RAC.
Are there, is there somewhere on the webpage where you can see the written submissions?
I haven't found it, but I haven't looked very hard.
Okay.
I've just seen the summaries that are presented at the meeting. And they gave it, what they did for the written comments that were submitted at the time of the presentation that weren't videos, they actually read them.
Yes.
So that's what I have seen on YouTube as far as, you know, what's available of total submissions, which there were a lot. I haven't found them any place on the website.
Well, I know that Steve made a written submission. I did also.
Right.
Is there anyone else who provided a written submission for the hearing?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so that's.
I always take the survey. I always supply a written submission. I always appear in person. That way, I get to say three times, and then I put it in my report to the board. So by then, they're pretty sick of hearing from me, but they've heard.
Okay.
I submitted both as well. This is Anthony.
Okay, so for the record then, four members submitted written submissions in addition to the three members who spoke by Zoom to the WMATA board itself. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay.
And I see a flurry of hands coming up for public comment.
I'll go in order. This is Anu. Ms. Rush, followed by Patrick Sheehan, and then Barbara.
Okay. I have a suggestion. This is Denise Rush. I have a suggestion. We have three members who have passed, Carolyn and Brian and Charlie. They have strong contributions to the AAC. And I suggest that maybe the Hessinger is a separate award, but maybe we can just have a meeting acknowledging those three people and maybe get a plaque for their family members because they are no longer with us, but not to slight them in any way. And maybe one of those people will be awarded the Hessinger, but those are three people that we need to talk about it or acknowledge their accomplishments and contributions to the AAC committee, aside from the Hessinger Award. That's just a suggestion. And I want to comment about the sedans. I don't want Mr. Blake to think that we're ungrateful about the sedans, but we just want to get something straight. But if they can spend $2 million on a bike rack for the bus, for the rail, we can almost get a whole fleet for $3 million, $3 or $4 million, 175 cars. So that's what I don't understand.
Well, but Denise, that's a capital project, and we need an operational budget in order to drive those cars. Mr. Blake is shaking his head and smiling, but I'm sure that's what he can tell you. We can buy the vehicles, but we...
Well, Tino, would you get on those $2 million bike racks? I asked you about it a year ago. Please?
Well, I did circulate the news article. Only came out in the past 10 days.
But I told you about it a year ago.
I know you did. I know you did, and I couldn't
find it. Denise has better information than I do.
Yeah, well, I couldn't find it when Denise asked me originally.
Okay. Well, now you got it. Let's bite on it.
Right. It was printed in the Post within the past 10 days.
How you can bite. No, Tino, I know how you can bite, and you will bite. Start biting. Turn into that person that you can be.
And can I just say one thing? And I want y'all to know, I think y'all know me by now. I'm not a person I'm passionate about this work. I'm passionate about what I do. And when we're engaged in frank, wrongful conversation, I believe that's what you guys want. You don't want me to come here and give you lollipops. And then I think you want frank, open, adult conversation. And we're going to agree a lot of times, I believe. We're going to disagree a lot of times. But in the end of the day, we're all after the same thing. What's in the best interest of our customers and what's in the best interest of public transit and the accessibility of the public transit. So I don't want you to feel that I would say, oh, they're not grateful. I'm going to take this away. I'm not like a kid in it. You know, I'm taking my ball home. Y'all can just ride those vans. I'm not like that. So, but we are going to have frank conversations because this is a new day for Metro Access, as y'all know, from the scheduling windows, sedans, shared rides. This is a new day. So we're going to have frank conversations, but I love all of you, and we're just going to keep battling philosophically.
Yeah, we just got to learn how to do the word wiggle with you. You know, we got to really listen to what you're saying. We got to understand you're going to use non-binding. You're going to say, and you're going to say like you say, one door has 90 degree. You twist the words. You know, you do the wiggle wobble.
Okay, Ms. Rush, thank you. And who is next?
Patrick?
Oh, man.
Patrick,
kind of. This is Pat. I sure am sorry I have to follow Denise. I tell you what. He mostly said what I was going to say, except it works. We have to have more of these. Couple things. Phil, you said earlier about getting answers from procurement, and I think that that's a one on the doors, because I think that that's the people that need to answer the questions, not ADAP. So even though I like to harass Mr. Blake, and probably his question to answer. Secondly, I wanted to also talk to Tino about the article that he sent out concerning the bicycles and the bike racks and all that $2 million that Denise wants to know where it is. I find that interesting. That was something I had no knowledge of, Tino, so thank you for that. And I would echo, I think, I forget who put it down, but I would echo that when we go to do the corrals for the e-scooters, that we make sure that we don't repeat the same mistakes that we've made, that were made here, and that we're cognizant of that fact. When we're down $250 million, what, 250,000? What is it? Whatever the budget shortfall is, we certainly want to make sure that we're spending our money wisely. Thanks.
Let me just make a Ramada comment. When we get numbers like multi-million-dollar bike racks and multi-million-dollar bus stops, or $500 cups of coffee at an event, that's a bottom line number. And the IG and everybody else should take a look at that and realize that includes the total cost, including the cost of design, implementation, setting it up and doing it. And so that may be a good number. And, you know, it may reflect a certain amount of not overt competence, but it may also reflect really good planning and long planning. And so just taking a bottom line number needs further investigation. And of course, that's why there's an inspector general to look into that. Because I have lived through many things, including $300 cups of coffee. And it turned out that, yeah, the coffee actually cost $1.50, but the rest of it was to pay for the room and the waiters and everything else that went on. So just it's good to bring it up. And hopefully it's being investigated at the appropriate level with the IG. And who do we have next?
Well before you go on, can I add, Mr. Chair, that those sandwiches are pretty expensive.
Yeah, but look at all the money you're saving now.
There you go. There you go.
And then who's next?
We'll go with Paul, and then Anthony, and then Doris, and then
Steve.
We'll continue with the list. Okay.
And then Can I just ask a question first? Can I just ask, where do you find the raising hands button? I don't see it on my screen.
If you click participants, you'll get a list of participants. And at the bottom of the participants list, there's a raise hand that you can click.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Got it.
All right, my only takes 15 seconds. I just sent to all y'all my revised max agenda based on tonight's discussion. So new, just, you know, as you do what you need to do with it cosmetically, drop it in the folder.
I will surely do that. Thank you, Paul.
All right.
Anthony, you're next.
This is Anthony, sorry. Are we in public comment? I don't know where we're at.
We're in free form.
Okay, we're in free form. All right, cool. I just wanted to bring up, so I don't know if everybody saw it. I did circulate around a potential template that I eventually want to discuss with the committee. I don't know if now is the right time. I think we would need more time. And I know we have a lot of other people who want to speak. But I just wanted to mention, if you had seen it, it's a table with just examples of goals that I put down. As I was thinking about, we have a lot of items that we go through month to month, week to week, what have you. And just to organize my own brain around it, I like to put those down in a handful of them so we can sort of focus our energies where we might want to go. So I think if it's okay with Tino, and I don't know if it's already on the agenda, but I would like to talk about that at next week's bus rail meeting.
Sure. It's okay with me.
Thank you. Next, Renu?
Doris, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to mention regarding the docking stations for the scooters and such. To the degree that we're doing that, and I don't know about the bicycles, but I'll just stick with the electronic stuff. The those types of devices, I believe that if I recall correctly, a lot of our jurisdictions, I know they're doing it for sure in Alexandria, and it's been discussed some in Arlington as well. Having the companies pay for docking, if that's what they want, because they're trying to get people to use their devices in lieu, for example, of getting on a bus and riding to a metro station. And so that's taking revenue actually from WMATA itself. So I think thinking about whether that expenditure should be made by WMATA or whether it should be a negotiations with the providers of those types of micro devices, I think, is important to consider when we're thinking about the whole cost benefit for WMATA of building docking stations for them.
Thank you.
It just spurred me to want to mention that in public comment, your discussion of it.
Thank you. Anu?
Steve, you have your hand up. Go ahead, please.
Oh, great. Sorry about that. Thank you. You know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I want to take this in a different direction. I'm sorry, regarding the 42, because, you know, I attended a meeting of the DuPont Circle Citizens Association, and I didn't bring it up, but some of the members of the association brought it up. And I've heard from people in the area know I'm on this committee. And so you know, they bring up the fact that they're now waiting twice as long for a bus on one of the thoroughfares of the city. And this area happens to be where probably the largest concentration of seniors in the area at DuPont Circle, because they live in the tall apartment buildings all along that area. And with right now, the 42 bus is their main lifeline bus to go to the to go shopping, and the largest CVS in the area, the one that stocks the PPE better than just about any other, and has a 24-hour medical center and pharmacy, is right at one of the DuPont Circle stops, and people use the 42 bus to come into DuPont Circle. A new bus was instituted called, and it was numbered 43, which previously, prior to the pandemic, ran Monday through Friday Express. There really is no reason at this point to have an express bus, and now the express bus is running 7 days a week, pretty much full time. The express bus has only one express in the entire route, and that's to bypass the DuPont Circle stops, leaving often, I've observed, five or six seniors waiting while the 42 goes past underground. So I just like to, in the 15 or 20 seconds I have, I'd like to make this more of a policy and procedure question, going back to internal audit or inspector general. I'd say more internal audit, because I think a study was done back in 2018 that decided that more express buses were needed during the rush hour periods. The situation has completely changed, and what we have now may be the new normal. I don't know whether bus operations has policies and procedures to review determinations prior to making implementation decisions. And, you know, this is something internal audit would look at, or they would look at. I'm raising it again only because I keep hearing it from other people. And
Steve, if I can make a suggestion.
Sure, Phil, thank
you. One of the most impressive things that I saw happen was at last month's board meeting. There were 73 public comments, all from one neighborhood by the 14th Street bus terminal, requesting electric buses because of the negative impact of the diesel buses in their neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
73 people showed up and presented their comments. And what I'm going to suggest is, next time you go to your DuPont Circle meeting, tell them to do that. If they go to the board in bulk, the same thing happened with one of the other bus routes. Everybody in the neighborhood showed up. There was only 22 people that spoke that time. This time it was 73.
No, I actually, Phil, I saw it online, and I was very impressed. They had.
And if you guys can do that to get them to do the study and to see who is being affected, that's the most effective thing that anybody can possibly do.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. Are the board meetings these days, given that they're virtual, open, or are they pretty much?
No, they're all virtual, and so you can either submit a written comment, which is then read by the chairman of the board, Mr. Snedberg, or you can submit a Zoom video, which they will then play, and everybody will see you physically do it. And so of the 73, there were about a third to a half of them were actual people that you saw on a recording, and the others were read by the chair.
Right. No, so
that's the way it's working now. And if you go to the board webpage, they give you all those directions of how you can submit them and do them.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. Thanks for the suggestion.
Okay, Anu, next.
Okay, Chair Posner, I see Tino has his hand up. And then we have Barbara and Ansel Torres.
Thank you.
I'm glad Steve was just ahead of me. I know that Steve is a CPA, and I'd like to tie that to the presentation made by the contractors who are going to build the e-scooter corrals. They made a presentation to us in July. I don't recall if they told us how much such a corral would cost. If they didn't, or even if they did, can we ask them again what the corrals will cost, so that once they're built, or even maybe as they're being built, Steve and the rest of us can look over their shoulder to make sure we don't come up with these $2 million bike racks or something.
Well, what they did, Tino, is they presented the studies that they had done, and they're being paid to do a design for the racks. Then that design will be turned into an RFP, which will then go out on bids. And so they're not the ones that know anything at all about the cost. That's all going to be, again, in procurement, putting that together.
Okay, but in any event, we should keep track of the construction of these e-scooters so that we don't have another bicycle rack scandal.
Oh, yeah. The thing that we need to do is what you have done already and follow up and see what their final design plan is. Because what they presented us was what they had done so far and asked for input from our group to make suggestions for improvement to their design. And so Carol, who is paying attention, I'm sure is on board with what the design group is doing, and she could probably let us know when it's time to invite them back again to show their final design that they're submitting to the board.
You know, that number seems so high that I wonder whether they allocated a large portion of WMATA staff and management costs that were focused in this area to that final number. And that number was presented without detail for that Washington Post article. And there's a lot more that we don't know regarding just how that number was constructed.
Thank you. Carol, you're about to say something.
Yes, I wanted to first of all clarify that I believe that $2 million bike racks are not bike racks. They're actually facilities that are designed and built to house bicycles for our customers. For example, each time a customer drives into our Metro garage, we have to build a garage that houses a car parking for that person that uses the Metro, and they pay a nominal fee of $5 or something like that. So when we have one customer that brings in their expensive bike and wants to make sure their bike is protected, safe, has a security camera, and all those things, we have to provide them a safe way of storing their equipment as well. They take up a whole lot less space, but they're just as important to a customer as the person who drove in a car, polluting the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what how this whole bike facility has been developed, the whole program. So it's not a bike rack. It's and I don't know what the cost is. I don't know if that's for two facilities. But as Phil said, a lot of these costs have a life cycle cost in associated with the amount it costs, like maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not, I can find out for the BRS meeting, but it's not just a bike rack. And remember, we're dealing with customers, and a customer drives in a car to protect their car and provide them a space, it costs a whole lot more than that bike rack in a bike facility.
So. Thank you. I'll point out we now have 16 minutes left and we have two more public speakers. So Anu, I believe Barbara was next.
Barbara is next. Barbara, go ahead, please.
Hi there, this is Barbara. And I would like to say regarding the procurement of the sedans. Rec, on that topic, Steve, I think it's important to give the procurement people some slack, if possible, because they really just don't know our issues. I will bring up that Glenn Millis always used to tell me back when we first started a lighting project, we don't know how you see. And that always stuck with me. And so the same thing is true about people who use wheelchairs, crutches, and other devices, is we just have to keep reminding them of how we experience life, and that just goes with the procurement people. So, just kind of move along, and for the next time we can get this fixed. I'm sure there was nothing that was done on purpose. But I do agree with Paul when he said about the driver and the front seat. I ride a lot of Ubers, and they really don't want you to sit up there. That is their office, per se. They have their lunch sitting up there, their groceries, all paperwork and different things. And for somebody to have to sit up there is just like they have to collect everything, and it's just disrupting. And I know we're not talking about an Uber, but I think a lot of, they need their office space. And I think if we can make it as mainstream as possible, because really, whether it's a paratransit or any other kind of ride, the driver, if possible, they don't want to have to help us. And if they can, they just want to transport the people, move along to the next call and make some money at this, go home and see their families and whatnot. So I do agree with everybody's saying about having more, at least one other door that's about 90 degrees. It will just make everything at Metro go a lot smoother, because if you have something that's very tight getting in and out, it's going to take up more time. And as we all know, time is money. And there's a lot of reasons why we need, additional doors that are accessible. And it could be just something like, the cars are had on the side of you are double parked. There could be an emergency. People might need to get out kind of fast. Any number of traffic, people piling up at the stores and whatnot, and you're trying to get you probably been shopping or something like that, and you might be having these big bulky packages. Those are a lot easier to put in if the opening is wider. So I think overall, if possible, have those, more doors that are wider opening. But I was wondering if you guys ever thought about a sliding door that would be in a car. And I don't know, these days, the sport utility vehicles and the cars are kind of that line. There is not that line any longer. There's kind of a melding of the two. And maybe there is a hybrid vehicle of that type that sits fairly low, because I know you probably don't want to have people step up high, because if they could do that, then they might as well get on a bus or something. But, check into that, because I have seen these hybrid vehicles where they sit fairly low and they have a sliding door. And that may be it, because that could give you the wide opening that you're looking for.
Thank you, Barbara. We could also use a DeLorean, which has a wing door, which would be absolutely very good. And not cost much more than those bike racks.
That's true. Okay. Have a good one.
All right, Phil.
Mr. Torres.
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. In all due respect to the last speaker regarding procurement and the driver needing the space for an office, I don't think we in the disabled community should carry the burden of being the apologists for drivers or for WMATA. WMATA and the drivers are being paid to provide services to everybody. And can you imagine what would happen if we said, oh, you know, give, I don't know, Google or give Uber a break. They don't know what it means to walk in a blind man's shoes as an excuse for them not to comply with 508. That would be devastating. Plus, as far as the law is concerned, the law doesn't care about whether or not you are aware or not aware of 508. The law is that you have to follow the law. And that should be our standard, because it's not their ox being gored, so they don't put in the effort to find out how it is to walk in our shoes. And I assume that the AAC is supposed to be the main vehicle for, if they wanted to find out how we see things, procurement should show up to an AAC meeting and find out. Or maybe we should be writing reports to procurement so that they could know how you walk in our, how to walk in a blind man's shoes or in a crippled man's shoes or whatever the disability or elderly situation is. Bill Gates of Microsoft wrote a book back in the 90s called The Road Ahead, where he was talking about the future of technology and how he saw things developing over the years and where he would like it to go. And one of the concepts that he introduced was something called friction-free capitalism, where it basically means that just like what you see now with Amazon, instead of having to take out your credit card and pay for groceries and that type of thing, you just, you know, you choose your groceries and you walk through the door and there's no line and your groceries are paid for. Well, in order to do that, you need to have sophisticated data systems. And when Metro Access was tasked to do what they do, it didn't seem to hire a lot of good scheduling people and database people, because those are two areas where they fall flat. And that is why you want to have vehicles in your fleet that can accommodate as many people as possible without sort of niching folks. So that, because when you do that, it means that the database that you have and the scheduling that you have to set up has to be a lot tighter and stronger. So, you know, to figure out, well, oh, I'm sending a vehicle to a person in a wheelchair, so, okay, I shouldn't send him the sedan. I need to send him a bus. Well, I can't tell you how many wheelchair folks that I know who have said that many times they will send a sedan instead of a bus, and they had to sit and wait. That is not friction-free capitalism at all. And Metro Access, I don't even think, understands the concept of friction-free capitalism, because they're certainly not employing it. On my final quick point, I believe that, speaking of knowing what it is to walk in our shoes, I believe that the folks in IT need to know how we walk on the computer, on the web, on their website that they design. So I am strongly recommending that the internet folks get a demonstration from a user like myself on their experience as they navigate the web. And I would recommend that it be at a meeting where we can demonstrate the issues that we're seeing, so it is documented and they will have a firsthand view of what it is like to walk in our shoes. And the procurement people should be invited, and we should get to know all of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Hassel. Right now, we have 6 minutes left, and I will apologize to Tino that we didn't get to Metro is Safe for Riders with Disabilities and Seniors as a committee discussion, but we have had a lot of email back and forth talking about that. And hopefully we'll get some follow-up during bus rail as to where we are. And that will actually be after the election. They may even have counted some of the votes. So we may have some idea of how much money WMATA will have to implement some of these things.
Chair Posner?
So if I could just...
Mr. Blake, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond, because I think Barbara made a good point, but I did want to make a clarification in terms of, I guess this goes back to what Patrick was saying. You can't, don't be using the two in an analogy, because it's not analogous. So in Uber, yes, those vehicles are personal vehicles, and the drivers often do use the front seat as a office, as you say. So we agree on that. That's how they're using them. Metro Access, that is absolutely not supposed to be the case. It is not their office. The front seat is available for the customers. That's the design. So I am going to follow up with TransDev and some of the things I've heard about their drivers tonight and reiterate these points with the other companies as they get more drivers. And not to leave Mr. Torres out, he made a good point about the IT. As y'all know, I made one change that was specifically a recommendation from him, and that was to, on the homepage where it said rail, bus, and accessibility, we've changed that to rail, bus, and metro access. So that was a small step, as Neil Armstrong would say. But now what we're gonna be doing, and how long it takes to get this underway and what have you, we are going to be working with my procurement colleagues to have a solicitation to bring in consultant or consultants. Somehow we're going to work on not just the accessibility, because I think, and I give David Schaefer a tremendous amount of credit for the work he has helped IT understand and, for the lack of better word, see what the challenges some of their design has created. But as Ms. Rusha says, we're bringing in a consultant or consultants to talk specifically about the usability of our external website. So you'll be hearing more about that in the future as well. So I wanted to just, as he raised that point, I wanted to bring that up and say, that's a good point, Mr. Torres. And one of your points prior, we addressed them. But again, that was a small step. And now we want to make a giant leap going forward, and we'll see how that turns out.
Thank you. 2 minutes left. Any last comments before we head out into the cold, freezing weather and go home?
Chair Posner, this is Anu. I just want to give information as far as how people looking to make public comments can do. So they can write in at Metro AAC Chair at WMATA.com. That's all one word. MetroAACHair at WMATA.com, or leave a message at 202-962-1100.
Mr. Chairman. Hello, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, I hear somebody screaming. I can't tell who it is.
Well, it's Bill Orleans calling in, and I pressed *6, and I guess I thought that Anu would see that there was a caller who had pressed *6, but apparently not.
Bill, you've got 2 minutes.
Yeah, very quickly, referencing the discussion earlier, the continuing discussion about sedans or vans, some years ago it was suggested, and I thought there was some agreement on the part of members of the AAC, that WMATA should use its influence as a significant member of APTA to pursue the design and manufacture of a purpose-built vehicle that would serve a purpose-built paratransit vehicle that would serve all riders of paratransit, whether they were in a large wheelchair or a smaller wheelchair or ambulatory with other disabilities. And I know I requested, or it was requested of Mr. Blake and before him Mr. Kent, to look into the possibility of there being a procurement through APTA, request for proposals issued through APTA of such a design. And while it's been brought up several times, I've never heard Mr. Blake respond to the status.
Okay, real quick, we've got less than a minute, so real quick, let me just quickly respond. That's the next solicitation that's coming up. We've done the sedans, and we need a sedan as part of our fleet as we're beginning to be a shared ride, very efficient public transit service. But the next generation van, which the AAC has submitted, I want to say about 13 recommendations, that's going to be the next solicitation of a vehicle going out within the next 25, 30 days. And it's got, we've worked on
overtime, but Bill, let me tell you, I included that in my last letter to the board and presentation to the board that with Glenn Millis, we have designed an optimum van and that sending that off to APTA for input so that we could get that to be the standard of the industry. And with that, our interpreters, it's time to go home and rest your hands. You've been very busy tonight. And thank you all so much. Have a safe trip home, and we'll see you on Monday.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Great job, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, excellent meeting.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.